Star Wars, The New Jedi Order, Dark Tide 2, Ruin, by Michael A. Stackpole. Shedao Shai stood deep within the living ship Legacy of Torment. Tall and lean, with hooks and barbs at wrist, elbow, knee, and heel, the Yu Zhong Vong warrior had pulled himself up to his full height. A slender, fleshy umbilical connected his ship to the cognition hood he wore. Shedao Shai saw what the ship saw and knew what it knew there, orbiting Dubrillion. Only the void of space surrounded him, the planet a blue and green ball slowly spinning beneath his feet. This is what it feels like to be a god. Shedao Shai hesitated for a second, barely a heartbeat, letting fear of having blasphemed run through him. He smothered the fear, knowing that Yanyamka, the god known as the Slayer, would allow him his conceit as a reward for having successfully taken so many worlds from the infidels. The priests had told the Yu Zhong Vong that their new home was here in what the infidels called the New Republic, and Shedao Shai bore the hideous responsibility of leading the attack that would make the priest's prophecy a reality. Yu Zhong Vong's scouts had located this galaxy over 50 years before. Later, agents had been infiltrated into it, and a whole generation had been trained to cleanse the galaxy of the infidels. Shedao Shai reached his mind into the memories stored within Legacy of Torment. He plucked one from a slave that had been employed as a soldier in the ongoing pacification of Dubrillion. The Chazrak had served the Yu Zhong Vong well in their wars. Some of the stocky reptilian humanoids were celebrated enough to be allowed into the warrior caste at its most basic levels. Through Chazrak eyes, Shedao Shai saw the soldiers move into narrow, dark recesses. The scrape of metal against stone alerted the Chazrak to danger. An infidel had hidden himself on a ledge above the passage's mouth. He swung a heavy metal bar, which whistled down toward the Chazrak's head. But the slave parried it with his ampha staff, then lunged up with the weapon's sharpened tail. The staff punctured the meaty part of the man's leg, allowing salty blood to spurt out when the slave yanked it free. All around Shedao's Chazrak, other soldier slaves attacked and fought. Shrieking infidels collapsed in bloody heaps. The ambush had become a rout, with the infidels seeking escape, but the flood of Chazrak made that impossible. Then Shedao Shai felt the soothing sting of pain. It entered his back just above his right hip and cut toward his belly. He felt the Chazrak try to suppress the pain as he spun away from it, allowing the weapon that had stabbed him to slip free of the wound. Shedao Shai arched his back and tore the cognition hood from his head. It was not the Shai way to allow himself to be tainted. The Chazrak was given a clear path to salvation, yet turned from it. Pain was not to be rejected, but embraced. As Shedao Shai saw it, to reject pain was to deny the very nature of the universe. Birth was pain, death was pain, all change required pain. Personal weakness distanced people from pain, which was to be woven through one, so a being could become transcendent and transfigured into the very likeness of the gods themselves. Shedao Shai walked to one of the pitted chamber walls and caressed a pearlescent orb embedded in it. Color drained from the wall, rendering it transparent. Behind the wall, arranged in a pyramidal hierarchy, lay relics of Domain Shai. Shedao Shai played a hand over the barrier between himself and the bones therein encased, pausing only at the open spot in the lower left corner. There he intended to enshrine the relics of Menge Shai, his grandfather, a valiant warrior who had perished on a scouting mission to a world known to the infidels as Bimiel. His sacrificial death resulting from attention to duty had brought great honor to Domain Shai, and had in very large part made it possible, no, vital, that Shedao be chosen to lead the invasion. Shedao had dispatched two of his kin to recover the relics, but they failed in their mission. Nira and Draenei Shai had been slain by Jedi, the most perplexing of the infidels.
They claim kinship with life, Shadow thought to himself, yet set themselves as above and outside life, using this mythical force to hide their wallowing in mechanistic blasphemy.
The Yuuzhan'vong commander shook off a shiver, then turned away from the relics and crossed the chamber. He stroked a red bar, and triple-jointed appendages, six of them, unfolded from the wall. The upper two appendages exuded a leathery tentacle that encircled his wrists and snagged tight. The lower four similarly produced straps that trapped his ankles and thighs. He felt himself lifted by his wrists, with the lower arms resisting. Joints popped, and little explosions of pain shot down his arms, making his fingers tingle. His feet then left the floor. They came up above the height of his head, forcing him to crane his neck back so he could study the relics. Firmly settled in the embrace of pain, Shedao Shai began to struggle against his restraints. The creature that was the embrace of pain wrenched his limbs, so his shoulders turned one way and his pelvis another. Sheer torment raced through him, igniting every nerve fiber in his body. He could not begin to catalog everything he felt. It came too much, too quickly, overwhelming him with pain until...
until all I am is pain.
His true goal achieved, he let his lips peel back from jagged teeth and thought,
the infidels did everything they could to save themselves from this sort of pain. They divorced themselves from all reality. This is why they are an abomination that must be cleansed from this galaxy. We have come to give them the truth. Shriven in the crucible of pain, the fortunate will know salvation before they die. The others...
He paused as a hot jolt curved up his spine to burst in his skull.
The others will become as lifeless as the machines they embrace. And the gods will rejoice at the fulfillment of our destiny.
The hiss crack of lightsaber smashing against lightsaber drowned out the sharp intake of Luke Skywalker's breath. As Mara Jade Skywalker attacked and Corrin Horn parried, Luke marveled at the complexity of the force flows around them. Mara and Corrin, longtime friends, each sought to push the other to the limit, and relied on guile and skill and strength to do it. What made it even more remarkable was that neither of them was in full health. Mara had been battling a disease that sapped her strength and defied Luke's best efforts to help her. He knew things could have been worse. Of 100 people diagnosed with the ailment, only she had survived. Her strength in the Force has sustained her, and in combat she lets the Force race through her. Corrin had only recently completed Bacta therapy for life-threatening wounds he'd earned in a fight with the Yuuzhan'vong on Dimir. While the injuries had healed, including the long-term effects of a biotoxin, getting his conditioning back and regaining his combat edge was not easy. Mara crashed her blade against Corrin's, driving him back. He held his lightsaber in toward his belly, then rotated his hand. The weapon's internal assembly shifted, more than doubling the length of the lightsaber's blade and infusing it with a deep amethyst hue. Mara laughed sharply. The surprise of Corrin's blade-lengthening tactic had worked on enemies before, but Luke knew she must have been expecting it and had long since worked out a strategy to deal with it. Mara swung to batter Corrin's blade aside, but got no spark and no hiss from a collision of the blades. Her mighty swing spun her around, and as she completed the circle, Corrin's purple blade carved an infinity symbol in the air before her. She thumbed her weapon off and bowed in Corrin's direction. Luke arched an eyebrow at Corrin. How long have you been waiting to use that tactic? Corrin sat cross-legged on the floor. The Vaughn got me thinking about it. We can't feel them through the Force, so we can't feel where they are. That makes them difficult to defend against. Mara snorted. Turning your blade off in the middle of a fight like that is a foolish thing to do. I know, but another touch of the thumb and you get spitted. Luke walked to the center of the training floor. Through a transparasteel dome, he could see the orderly flow of airspeeders moving through Coruscant's sky. Everything seemed so normal when he looked at the outside world. Yet beneath the dome in Jedi headquarters, things boiled like storm clouds on the horizon. Both of you did very well, all things considered. Beyond them, striding boldly through an archway, came a Jedi with a black cloak billowing behind him. His upper lip curled with a hint of contempt. Then he smiled carefully. Good afternoon, Master Skywalker. The way he spoke the word master made it a simple title, draining it of any sense of respect. Good afternoon to you, Kip Duran. Luke kept his voice even. I thought you'd be here later. Kip waved back toward the archway. I convinced the others to speed their arrangements. We are ready to convene the Council of War right now. Luke raised his chin. This is not a Council of War. The Jedi do not go to war. We are protectors and defenders, not aggressors. With all due respect, Master Skywalker, the difference is a mere semantic one. Kip frowned. Regardless, I have the others with me. What shall I tell them? Luke nodded wearily. Tell them I appreciate their coming here so quickly. Their input will be treated with respect and considered fully. We will meet with them tomorrow. Tomorrow? I understand and obey, Master. Kip bowed once quickly, then marched out very precisely. Corran caressed the ignition button on his lightsaber. If I had any talent for telekinesis at all, I'd have strangled him with his own cloak. Luke shook his head. Even joking that way compounds the problem we have with Kip and his faction. They've all grown up in the post-Empire era. They've always had dreams of being Jedi that could destroy the greatest evil we've ever known. What I had to do fighting the Empire, that's how they think we should handle all evil. Yes, but, Master, we have to be realistic. Corran clipped his lightsaber to his belt. The Vong are formidable and merciless. We can't sense them with the Force. This takes away a lot of the abilities most Jedi have come to rely on. No, Corran, you're wrong. Luke thumped a fist against his heart. Being Jedi is what we are. It's not the power we wield and the weapons we carry. I don't stop being a Jedi when stripped of the Force by Nissa Lamiri. We serve the Force, whether our enemies are part of it or not. Corran thought for a moment, then nodded. I see your point, but I'm not sure they will. A normal reaction to fear is to strike out at that which frightens us. Luke rubbed a hand over his forehead. The missions for us as Jedi are simple. We go to the frontier worlds and help evacuate the helpless. We go and coordinate defensive postures. Mara looked up sharply. What about scouting missions? Corran and Ganner brought back useful information from Vimeo, including those samples of biotech the Yuuzhan Vong use, and that mummified Yuuzhan Vong body. The more intelligence we can gather on them, the better off we'll be in dealing with them. I agree, but with fewer than 100 Jedi and with hundreds of worlds as potential targets, how do we allocate our people? Corran straightened. Well, the only place we know for certain that we can find the Vong is on worlds they've taken. I can review data on the conquered worlds and see if there's any way we can get a mission in. It won't be easy. None of this will be easy, Corran. The Jedi Master reached out and took Mara's hand. We'll just have to make sure that the Jedi do everything we can to fulfill our mission. I'm afraid that failure may shatter the Jedi from within. If that happens, the Yuuzhan Vong will face no opposition at all. Something about returning to the suite of rooms where he'd spent much of his time on Coruscant felt very odd to Jason Solo, even though the place didn't look that much different than he remembered it. His room was down the hallway, his parents' suite was upstairs, C-3PO still puttered about. Anakin, his younger brother, stood over by the transperisteel viewport, studying the lines of speeders tracing their paths through the sky. Jason got almost no sense of Anakin through the Force. What little he did get was somber and tinged a bit with apprehension. Jaina, on the other hand, brimmed over with bright emotion. Seeing his twin brought a smile to Jason's face. Her joy at having joined Rogue Squadron infected him, broadening that smile. He enfolded his sister in a hug. I've missed you. The squadron has been keeping you busy, has it? Jaina returned the hug fiercely. Yes. We're recruiting new pilots, and I'm helping to screen them. I monitor their reactions when we show them what the Yuuzhan Vong do in combat. We work on weeding them out based on performance and such things. Jason smiled. Jedi senses are good for that sort of thing.
I know, but what's amazing is this. Wedge Antilles and Tycho Selkiu are helping, and without using the Force, they seem to flag the same people I do. Years of experience is serving them the way the Force does me.
Anakin laughed lightly.
I don't think years of experience will lift big rocks.
Jason moved past his sister and seated himself on the couch.
Experience is one thing that can help anyone, including Jedi. We learn from things so we don't repeat mistakes.
Anakin nodded, then resumed staring out the viewport.
Good thing some mistakes can't be repeated.
His sister sighed and started toward him.
Anakin, it wasn't your fault.
Anakin held up a hand, stopping her.
Maybe I didn't kill him. But was there something I could have done that would have saved him? I have to believe there is. So when there's a next time...
Jason sat forward. You've been through your next time, Anakin. You saved Mara.
Sure, right up to the point where you and Luke saved me and her.
One corner of Anakin's mouth cocked itself into a grin. You got me halfway to an answer.
I just have to get myself the rest of the way.
Jason nodded. It had not escaped him that Anakin had not actually spoken the name Chewbacca. The Wookiee's death had hurt them all terribly and deeply. All three of them fell silent, turning inward.
Hey, it's so quiet down there.
Jason looked up at the stairs and saw a man standing there, but it took him a heartbeat to realize it was his father. Han Solo's clothes hung looser, and his flesh was tinged with a gray pallor instead of the rich bronze from being kissed by so many suns. Han Solo had swept his hair back out of his eyes, but wore it longer than Jason could ever remember. The length hid some of the gray, but not all of it, especially at the temples. The greatest discontinuity with his father, though, was the way his initial comment trailed off. Jason had heard him utter the same line 100 times, usually when the family needed tension broken. His father would smile, open his arms, and say, "It's so quiet. Did somebody die?" Jason thought,
"But you can't say that, Father. Tells me just how bad it really is."
Jason heaved himself up from the couch.
"Good to see you, Dad. I came as quickly as I could after I got 3PO's message."
Jaina looked up at her father.
"The message sounded pretty urgent. What's going on?"
Han took a deep breath, then let it out in a long sigh. He seated himself in a chair, then sat forward and rested his elbows on his knees.
"Look, I don't know how to tell you this. It's not easy."
He stared down at his clasped hands.
"Losing Chewie..."
His voice failed for a moment, then he swallowed hard.
"It's okay, Dad. We know. We all love Chewie, too."
Han ran his hand down his face.
"Losing him, you know, made me think what else I had that I could lose. That scared me the way I've never been scared before. I mean, me, Han Solo, scared."
Jason moved to stand at his father's right hand, awkwardly patting him on the shoulder.
"We understand, Dad. We really do."
But his father had already shut him out.
"Yeah, well, there's nothing to understand."
Jason sighed.
"We may beat the Yuuzhan Vong, but will my family survive the battle?"
Leia Organa Solo slowly rose from her chair in the briefing room. Above a hollow projector plate hung a representation of a rimward portion of the New Republic.
"Data just keeps flowing in. The silence from Belkaden, Bimuel, Dantooine, and Cernpedal should come as a surprise to no one, since the Yuuzhan Vong have taken those worlds, and they didn't have much population on them to start. From Debrillion, we still get some reports, but those are becoming fewer and farther between. It does look as if Debrillion is going to serve as the Yuuzhan Vong headquarters, at least in the short term. From Garki, we're not getting much, but all indications are that the Yuuzhan Vong have landed, assumed control, and are putting programs into effect for whatever their ends are." Admiral Traist Kreefe, a young Bothan whose violet eyes were flecked with gold, smoothed his snowy white mane.
"The refugees are moving through Agamar fairly quickly. We are debriefing qualified witnesses. The Yuuzhan Vong seem to be using proxy troops for most of the cleanup. We have reports of slaves being turned out and some rumors about collaborators, but the latter are little more than gossip at this point."
Borisk Felya, leader of the New Republic, screwed his face up into a snarl.
It is to be expected that some people cower and cling to the strongest force around. We saw plenty of that under the Empire.
Leia shook her head. The Yuuzhang Vong are much worse than the Empire ever was.
From your perspective, Leia, the Empire dealt with non-humans as dispassionately as you describe these Yuuzhang Vong doing with humans. Now you know what we faced.
She let her quick guffaw contract her belly, then gave the Bothan a smile full of teeth.
They destroyed my home world, Borisk.
Ah, yes, we are yet again reminded.
Borisk Velia's remark died as Elikas Akla, a Kamasi, reached out with a hand and settled it over the Bothan leader's forearm. Leia saw muscles bunch in Elagos's arm and the resulting start from Felia. The Kamasi's voice remained even.
While our fatigue may shorten our tempers, we must be mindful of our duty here.
He inclined his head toward the man seated opposite him.
I noticed that General Antilles seems to have a datapad full of notes.
Wedge Antilles raised his head. I've been looking at Yuuzhang Vong actions the same way I used to look at Imperial moves, and I've got some basic questions that need answering. Borisk Felia sat back in his chair.
I understand well the value of learning as much as we can about our foe. But my concern as leader of the New Republic is containment of this scourge.
Wedge nodded.
What Traist and I are doing is organizing system defenses on the worlds we think the Yuuzhang Vong will hit. We all know that forces bent on taking a planet are most vulnerable as they transit from space to surface. If we can hold them up and slow this transition, we have far longer to bring firepower to bear on them. That's how we'll stop them.
You're baiting traps for them,
said Borisk Velia.
We don't know what they want, so bait is not something we can offer.
Wedge sighed.
We know they use slaves. We know they hate machines. We know their weapons are all organics. And we know they have a thing about pain. But the significance of any of this has not been assessed.
Leia patted his hand.
I know your frustration, Wedge. We can detail operations to go out and learn as much as we can. I'm sure Luke will lend us some Jedi for covert runs.
No, no Jedi.
Borisk Velia shook his head.
The people don't respect them anymore. The Yuuzhang Vong have slain Jedi. The most powerful of the Jedi, your brother, was induced to leave Belkaden, abandoning an unknown number of slaves. Add to that the rumors that Jedi Force skills are less than adequate against the Yuuzhang Vong, and you can see why there is no confidence in them. If we use them to spearhead operations, we will look foolish.
Pain arced temple to temple in Leia's head. Politicians like Felia tried their best to work within the guidelines set by the will of the people. She cradled her head in her hands.
I don't think we can stop Luke from sending his Jedi out to help people. You do realize that?
Oh, I do, Leia.
Felia's lips peeled back in a feral grin.
My only concern is that we cannot sanction them. They will have to operate without our support.
Leia sighed.
If we are unable to use the Jedi, then I suppose my mission to Bastion will be out as well.
Felia's smile broadened.
No, not at all. If you want to go and talk Pelion into using his firepower and personnel to defeat the Yuuzhang Vong, I would applaud it.
Leia glanced at Elagos, and they nodded to each other. In discussing her idea to ask the Imperial Remnant for help, the two of them had run through various scenarios, and no matter which one they reviewed, it always turned to political advantage for Borisk Velia. If Leia succeeded in getting the Remnant to come to the aid of the New Republic, she could easily be painted as a collaborator with a reactionary element, while Borisk could position himself as heir to the traditions of the rebellion. If the Remnant refused, they would be vilified, and Leia along with them, for having such poor judgment as to try to deal with them.
I am so glad you approve, Borisk.
Senator Akla and I will be leaving in 2 days for Bastion. Elagos held up a three-fingered hand.
Leia, I won't be going with you.
Leia blinked.
What? Where will you be?
The Kamasi sighed.
I think you are all on the right course for dealing with this problem. You have covered all aspects of it, save one. What the Yuuzhang Vong want. I intend to go to Debrillion to ask.
No, impossible. Leia shook her head adamantly. We tried to communicate with the Yuuzhang Vong. They didn't want to communicate with us.
Kamasi leaned forward.
As a senator, I bear responsibility for millions of people. I do not want to see them dead or dying. It is my responsibility to do what I can to avert this war. You know my people are pacifistic, yet you know I have fought before. I do not wish to fight again. So, to Debrillion I must go.
Leia shivered.
And if you're not successful? Then, my dear, my fate will matter little, given the gravity of what will come.
Luke entered the Jedi auditorium and saw he'd made a tactical error in leaving the arrangements to Kip. There were two tables on the stage, angled to form a wedge. To the left were Kip Duran, Ganna Rizzotti, Worth Skidder, and the Twi'lek, Deshara Kor. Her presence on that side surprised Luke, because she'd always seemed to view Kip's rhetoric as being extreme. At the other table, there were only three chairs. Corrin Horn and Cam Solyusar stood by two of them, conversing. The Jedi Masters mounted the steps with no ceremony and sat on the edge of the stage. To his right, Cam and Corrin jumped down to the floor to keep themselves lower than he was. This pressured Kip and his confederates to do the same, though Deshara Kor seated herself on the edge of the stage and gathered her leku around her like a shawl.
"Thanks for joining me. You worked hard setting this up, but I didn't really want it to be too formal. It made this too much of a council of war. What we need is a meeting of sapient beings who will decide the course of our future."
Worth Skidder smiled carefully.
"You suggest, Master, that this is not a council of war. Yet we find ourselves with a merciless enemy that is invading the New Republic. Is it not to counter threats like this that the Jedi were created?"
Luke pressed his hands together for a moment.
"The Jedi are meant to protect and defend the people of the galaxy. The distinction between protectors and warriors is critical to avoid the seduction of the dark side." Ganna Rizzotti, tall and dark, eclipsed Skidder.
"Perhaps, Master, the confusion we suffer comes from the point where an offensive action can be defensive. A preemptive strike at a target, for example, is merely proactive defense."
"A very good point, Ganna." Luke looked out at the Jedi gathered there. Humans and aliens of both genders, they projected keen interest, with concern tainting the edges. "The Yuuzhang Vong have taken a number of worlds. Now many beings are in jeopardy, but that jeopardy is unfocused. Until the threat goes from general to specific, we can't use proactively defensive tactics against it. Once we have a focus, we can plan and use our abilities to the best in dealing with the danger. Agreed?"
Most of the Jedi nodded their heads.
The Jedi Master smiled slowly.
"I do have some bad news. I learned from my sister yesterday that the New Republic will not sanction or support any Jedi operations in the invasion corridor."
Deshara Kor shook her head. "How could they abandon us like this, after all we have done?"
Luke held his arms out. "Face it, our exploits of late have been less than awe-inspiring. The politicians can't support the Jedi."
Skidder groaned.
"So we babysit refugees while others do the fighting?"
Kip Duran raked fingers back through his dark hair.
"We get no more active missions?"
Luke shifted his shoulders uneasily.
"One mission. Corrin is being sent to Garki. Figures he'd be your choice."
"He wasn't, actually, Kip." Luke smiled carefully.
"That choice was taken away from me."
"What?"
Corrin's mirth at Kip's surprise leaked out through the Force.
"I used to fly with Rogue Squadron and resigned my commission there 5 years ago. That left me in the military reserve, and they just reactivated me."
Luke nodded.
"Colonel Horn will lead a team of 6 commandos and 2 civilian observers into Garki to study the Yuuzhang Vong, coordinate with any resistance movement, and set up operations to try to get people off-world."
Ganner rested his fists on his hips. A half dozen commandos against a planet full of Yuuzhang Vong?
They're Nokri, Ganner, Corrin shrugged. Besides, I figured to tap you as one of my civilian observers. Figured you had to be the equal of another dozen Nokri, right?
Ganner's harsh expression lightened.
Nokri, the mission has merit.
Corrin looked out into the audience.
Jason, I've talked with Master Skywalker, and he's consented to having you be the other observer. Want the slot?
Luke could feel the different emotions warring within Jason, but adherence to duty won out. The youth stood.
I'm, honored to be asked. If you think I should go, Master, I'll go.
Good, Jason. I knew I could count on you.
Luke clapped his hands once.
I'm in the process of preparing assignments for the rest of you. They should be ready by the end of the week. You may think your skills are being wasted, I appreciate that, but these are the tasks that need doing.
Fury arced from Desharakur.
If we persist in this course, we will find the Yuuzhang Vong right here on Coruscant. I know it. I can feel it.
You may be right, Desharakur. I hope you're not. Luke's expression hardened.
But if we follow your course, if we become warriors and go totally on the offensive, the Yuuzhang Vong being here would be the least of our worries.
Luke's voice sank.
Because then we would be 100 Darth Vaders, and that should fill all of you with more fear than anything we face now.
Leia Organa Solo sat silently in the passenger compartment of the Marquetta-class shuttle, Chandrila Moon. She forced herself to exhale slowly, letting her tension bleed away. Some of it, anyway. The journey from Coruscant to Bastion had been undertaken under the tightest security possible, but it would be foolish to assume that she would be completely safe in Remnant territory. Still, if the greater threat of the Yuuzhang Vong was to be dealt with, the Remnant would have to be informed of what was going on and convinced their fate and that of the New Republic were intertwined. As the screen in the front of the cabin showed Admiral Pelion's ship, the Chimera, looming large, and Bastion's customs station, yet larger, she had second thoughts. Her focus on New Republic internal affairs had insulated her from contacts between the Remnant and the New Republic. She found herself lacking a sense of the Remnant, which meant she didn't know how difficult it would be for Admiral Pelion to offer help. According to the file she had been given, little or none of the data about the Yuuzhang Vong had been released to the Remnant, so while they might know something was going on, they wouldn't have details.
If that has spiked their paranoia, this mission might be doomed before it starts.
The pilot's voice echoed through the cabin.
We have permission to set down at Bastion's customs station.
Gilad Pelion, clad in the uniform of a Grand Admiral, stood at the far end of a white table in a large reception room that had a wall of transparasteel that allowed them to look out at the Chimera. Beyond it sat Leia's ship, and below, the world of Bastion, all looking very peaceful. He had no guards with him and wore no weapons. He smiled as Leia entered and waved her toward the chair at his right hand.
It is good to see you again, Council Organa Solo. Please be seated, and tell me what has prompted your visit.
He nodded to the three of his own people who accompanied her from the docking bay, indicating their place was along the other side of the table. Leia leaned in toward Pelion, capitalizing on his openness.
I've come to correct a problem we've had sharing information with you. Something very important has happened. Something that could determine the future of both the New Republic and Imperial space.
Pelion nodded slowly.
You're referring to the fall of Dubrillion.
Leia managed to cover her surprise.
How did you know?
The flesh around the Admiral's eyes tightened.
Dubrillion and other New Republic worlds that border our space are of interest to us. I'm certain, Council, it will come as no surprise that we had agents on Dubrillion. While the messages they got out did not contain a lot of information, we knew something was amiss. The cessation of their communications confirmed it was a serious problem.
Leia nodded. You know some of what has gone on, then. I have a data card that will fill in the technical details, but the brief
is this. Humanoid aliens from outside the galaxy have attacked or destroyed half a dozen worlds on the rim. They're called the Yuuzhan Vong. The Admiral sat back.
You have come to ask for aid in dealing with them?
Leia nodded. You perhaps better than anyone know the difficulty of dealing with an enemy who can strike anywhere. Halion glanced across the table at his people, two of whom wore Imperial uniforms.
Your request has not gone unanticipated, Council. These men have told me at various times that any military cooperation with the New Republic would be a trap. You would lure our ships away from our home and destroy them, then finish your conquest of Imperial space. To them, this threat is a sham.
Leia shook her head. Your intelligence forces must already know that my 16-year-old daughter has joined Rogue Squadron. If I did not think the Yuuzhan Vong were a grave threat, do you think I would allow my child to join the military?
Palian nodded. Your point is well taken, Council. I will review the material you have brought. I am not unsympathetic to your plight, and I, as well as many others in the Empire, do feel a responsibility for the people of the New Republic. If we are able, we will help.
Leia returned his nod. I can't ask for more than that.
Luke Skywalker glanced at the datapad on his desk. Compiling assignments for all the Jedi had not been as simple a task as he had hoped. Those given solo missions wondered why they were being sent out alone. Those who were traveling in pairs or larger groups wondered if Luke doubted their abilities. The philosophical split among the Jedi raised the smallest of conflicts to a whole new level. He massaged the back of his neck.
Well, R2, I thought saving the galaxy was hard work. Being a bureaucrat is even worse.
The little droid's head swiveled around, and R2-D2 tootled at him. The droid had plugged its interface into a computer connection and had been helping Luke track the Jedi as they headed out. Mara entered the office and waved Anakin in after her.
Luke, we may have a problem. Anakin found the initial stuff. I'll let him explain.
The brown-haired youth smiled.
To help plan missions in the future, I created a computer program to analyze the usage of our data library. By tracking the files accessed after assignments were made, we'd learn what kind of information the Jedi needed to complete their missions. In the future, we could add those files to the mission assignments, saving some time.
The Jedi Master smiled broadly.
That's very good thinking. And the problem is?
My program caught 15 more requests than the official control file had listed in it.
The youth shrugged.
R2, if you can, pull up the anomaly file and send it to Uncle Luke's datapad.
Luke glanced at the screen and saw a list of 15 files with descriptions for each appended.
More installation, Death Star, Sun Crusher, Dark Saber, Eye of Palpatine. Now, these are all about superweapons and the places they were built.
The reason the control file didn't list these 15 library information requests is because whoever asked for the files went in and deleted the requests, right?
Yes.
Anakin shook his head. The appropriate memory sectors had been overwritten twice. Whoever did it is very good. Luke sighed, then looked up at his wife.
You have suspects?
She nodded slowly.
I checked our files. There are a handful of Jedi who have the necessary computer skills.
I ruled Anakin out immediately, ditto Tion,
but Octa Ramis could be a problem.
Tion says Octa Ramis and Miko Reglia had a romance at the Academy. The Yuuzhan Vong killed Miko. I can see her wanting to seek revenge, even if it's of the dark side. Luke sighed heavily.
You've checked on Octa?
She has boarded her ship and is on her way. Luke sat back and ran a hand over his jaw.
Interesting.
Her associates? Mara smiled.
She's been on a number of missions with Deshara Kor.
But Deshara Kor is on the Durastar, going off to Bimsari.
R2 shrilled confirmation of Luke's comment.
Luke's wife shook her head.
There are zero Twi'lek females listed on Durastar's passenger manifest.
Anakin nodded.
I figure she boarded, planted some memories on the staff, and then left the ship before it departed.
The Jedi Master closed his eyes.
Something doesn't make sense here. What is Deshara Kor's motive?
Mara shrugged. I don't know, but I think motive is secondary right now. We need to find out where she went. An airspeeder got them to Docking Bay 9372 quickly enough. Luke opened himself to the Force and did his best to immerse himself into Sharakor's mindset. She had an interest in superweapons and had access to fairly confidential files concerning them. She knew she was expected to be in Bimsari in 5 days, so that narrowed down her choice of destinations. Before Luke could figure out what de Sharakor had been looking for, he felt something through the Force that seemed out of place. It began as curiosity, but spiked immediately into fear. Luke looked to his right and saw a man hastily pulling up the hood on his cloak and turning away. The Jedi Master gestured easily. "Wait, don't go." The cloaked man fought against Luke's suggestion, but his torso turned.
"Me?"
Luke nodded slowly. "I think you can help me. You're here often, and you make a living by spotting needs and fulfilling them. Isn't that true?"
I've done nothing."
A security officer came walking over. "Is Chalco here giving you trouble, Master Skywalker? I will deal with him." Luke casually waved a hand. "Thank you. Not necessary." The security officer blinked once, then continued on his way. "What you do here, Chalco, is of no concern to me right now. I think you may be able to help me, though. 2 days ago, a Twi'lek, a Jedi, was here. She was supposed to leave on the Durastar, but she did not embark on the ship. You saw her, yes?" The man slowly nodded.
"She boards the ship, but I never seen her come off. Then, later, I saw her talking to a mate on a freighter. She did that thing with her hand that you did there, and the mate, he just turned away from her like she wasn't even there."
Luke's eyes narrowed. "What was the name of the freighter?"
"Lucky Star 2. Tramp freighter makes stops all over the place. Half of them aren't on the flight plan. I think they were making for Ord Mantell, but I don't know."
"Good. Thank you." The man opened his hand.
"Hey, I help you. You gonna do something for me?"
Luke crossed his arms over his chest. "What would you have me do, Chalco?" The man shrugged.
"Well, I don't know. Maybe make all the security guys here forget what I do?"
"If I did that, there would still be the surveillance holocams." Luke openly appraised the man, noting that despite having thickened around the middle, he was still powerfully built. "Let's try this. I think I'm going to need someone to help me locate the Jedi. If you come with me and we succeed, I'll speak to the authorities on your behalf." Chalco hesitated.
"You'd trust me to come with you?"
The man's brown eyes shifted.
"You know what I am. That I make my living as I can, doing whatever."
"And here's a chance for you to make it doing something beneficial." Luke nodded once. "So, yes, I'll trust you. Meet me back here in an hour, all packed and ready to go." Mara approached as Chalco departed. She glanced at her husband.
"Picking up strays?"
The Jedi Master gave her a sidelong glance. De Sharakor's mother was a dancer who traveled very extensively. As a youngster, she spent a lot of time in spaceports. She knows her way around, and we're going to need help catching her. Chalco noticed her hanging about. Chances are de Sharakor took a freighter that was destined for Ord Mantell, but might have made some stops along the way.
"And she could be anywhere."
"I doubt it. There's one world out in that direction that will help de Sharakor."
Luke gave his wife a smile.
"We've got to get a ship. We're bound for Garros 4.
"Garros 4?
Mara took Luke's hand.
"There's nothing there but the University of Garros."
She paused.
"Oh, the firings."
Garros 4 had not joined the New Republic until after Thrawn's defeat, whereas Issane Isehart had destroyed many covert records on Coruscant when the world fell to the rebellion. No such destruction had taken place on Garros 4. Scholars descended on the world to use the secret Imperial files to complete studies of the Empire. Luke nodded. "If de Sharakor is on a quest for a weapon to use against the Yuuzhan Vong, she'd want to access those files."
Jedao Shai spun on his heel before the harsh scream had a chance to echo down the street.
A ragged human slave, flesh-coated with dust, broke from a work detail and rushed at him. The slave's eyes blazed past the nubbins of coral growths on his cheeks, and he raised a piece of Duracrete debris to smash the Yuzhong Vong leader down. Shedao flowed forward, catching the slave's throat in one hand. He lifted the man effortlessly, then battered the debris aside with his other hand. Unable to speak because of the hand crushing his throat, the man nodded sharply as if to demand death from the Yuzhong Vong leader. The Yuzhong Vong commander shook his head once, then cast the man toward the two warriors who were overseeing the workgroup.
Take this one to the priests. Have them prepare him. If he survives, he will be of use.
The two warriors each grabbed an arm and bowed respectfully, tugging the man back down the street.